Time. Time is relative, they say. Well, I say that, relatively speaking, time is almost always at odds with a contented life. It always crawls when it should run and slips away when it should linger. And sometimes, time pushes you to make rash choices, as does the life of a gilder. The Gold Tree family finds themselves at a crossroads in their story, with all too little time. And the Golden Tree Adventuring Guild must now answer the call in their stead. Life isn't a matter of milestones, but of moments. And the Golden Tree Adventuring Guild finds themselves in such a moment. A romance must be forged, or at least a seasonal emerald decided upon, before a creature that has pursued our heroes throughout their time in the restricted section of the Agmar Library makes an arrival. One way or the other, our adventurers and our beloved family are all up against the wall. But as we all know, tough times never last, but tough people do. Welcome to what may be the final episode of Reckless Abandon, a Regency romance podcast.
Golf clap.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hi, Nathan.
It is me, your... I didn't come up with a dumb fake title from my... I am your dance master, Nathan. Joined, as always, by the excellent players around the table. Hello, excellent players.
Hello.
Well, hello.
Hi.
Could you please, excellent players, reintroduce yourselves, not just as players, not just as your characters, but as your characters' characters, starting, please, with...
Hi, everyone. I'm Jonathan, and I play Checkers, the Grung Druid, and his trusty frog pals, Mango and Junior, who tonight is playing Charity Goldtree, the matriarch of the Goldtree family. And I'm having a great time here at the Emerald Gala, and... really excited to see what comes out of the end of this story.
Yeah. Something's definitely going to. Yep. Something's going to come out. Yep.
And to my right.
Hi, everyone. I'm Sophie. I play Valeska Carter, the human astral cleric of the Arcana Domain, who tonight is playing Violet Goldtree, the independent-minded daughter of Charity and...
Hi, everyone. I'm David, and I play Kaskrin Brightmane, the Dwarven Warlock, who is also tonight playing Kendrimin Goldtree, Master of the Goldtree Estate.
I don't know why, but every time you say Master of the Goldtree Estate, I'm out, it always just like brightens my day a little bit. You know, I don't know why. It's just, it's nice.
And Kaskrin is just flabbergasted by all of these romance novels in his study. Like, they just showed up out of nowhere and are definitely not his.
Yeah, wow. who could have summoned them here?
Yeah. Wow, a conundrum. And to my left.
Hi, everyone. My name is Steve, and I play Selv Asterlin, the dragonborn monk, who, at this very moment, is also playing mild-mannered Sylvester Lynn.
Indeed.
The head butler, who, before the end of the night, might be butlering heads. We don't know.
I was hoping you were going to say, might give someone a little kiss.
Oh. Could be.
Could be. We don't know what's about to happen.
This is unscripted. It could go anywhere.
Exactly. It is the power of the dice and imagination, and there are so many kisses that we can imagine. As a quick reminder slash recap to both listeners and to the players around the table, we have been playing a Regency romance game, which was not Dungeons & Dragons. But we're at the end of that. Not in terms of how it usually would be played, but in our condensed version
of
it.
Our arc.
Yes, exactly. And, well, you guys have been given a bit of a deadline. And it wasn't the usual deadline that you guys kind of thought you had, where, yes, we will kind of spend the next several days wowing everyone, scheming, using our various wiles and charms to position Dear Violet as the emerald of the season. Instead, you got yelled at by a ghost who said, "Hey, guys, something bad is happening," and you heard roars. That kind of was an inspirational moment, I would say, for you guys to maybe jumpstart the end of the fictional journey that your characters are in. Very meta, I understand. And you guys have kind of decided that, you know what? Maybe we can turn this several hundred page Austin novel into maybe a short and spicy novella by guessing where the eligible bachelor of the season, Quincy Feathertop, is going to be in the morning and trying to just kind of squeeze in some quick romance. And I don't mean that as like a double entendre kind of situation. Instead, to use that as an opportunity to really set the stage for a grand dramatic gesture by Violet to essentially speed the romance along, so to speak, or at least give it a narratively appealing answer for whatever strange logic infests the restricted section of the library here. We got a little glimpse of that moment at the end of last episode. It was beautifully delivered by our very own Sophie. But that doesn't really encapsulate all the work that no doubt went into ensuring that this pivotal moment was going to go well. So we are going to have a kind of a flashback montage of essentially just kind of recapping what you guys have done in the background to set the scene again for this kind of perfect, crystalline, romantic moment in time.
Listeners, please know that I, Sophie, am imagining this moment as I Won't Say I'm in Love from the animated film Hercules, and they're all the muses trying to get Megara to fall
in love.
That's
reasonable.
But also, it might end up with Checkers hitting someone.
Yeah.
If we're lucky.
Yeah. But that's what's happening in my mind.
That's your canon,
my canon.
The vibes that we're
the
kind
vibes.
Of aiming towards. Mm-hmm. Yes, 100%. Maybe let's start by resetting the scene once more of kind of what we're all building towards and kind of the environment that you guys will be able to manipulate as you prepare for this moment.
So Violet stands before Quincy, just a fictional girl asking a fictional boy.
Mm-hmm. A double fictional boy, really.
the
fiction inside of a fiction.
To fictionally love her.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
They are on a wide balcony looking over the formal gardens beneath them. There is a water feature, whether it be a lake or a pond. There is, I always imagine there's a willow tree, but in a formal garden that doesn't make sense, but it's a fantasy world, so it doesn't matter. There's a willow tree. There are beautiful flowers, vibrant colors, and again, it's a dewy early morning, the sun breaking over like a Greek-inspired faux pantheon you'd find in many an English garden. And there they are. Seems like the two of them are the only people in this garden. A moment alone. A moment to confess an unrequited love.
And also, just to kind of remind everyone, is that I think we've established that you guys had a relationship prior. I think it was like a friendly childhood kind of thing. But there was some dark secret, some betrayal that happened that kind of caused a rift between you, correct?
Not necessarily a betrayal, but Violet being an extension of Val, Violet did win the academic version of the Emerald of the Season that when they were younger was kind of the talk of the ton. And everyone thought Quincy would win, that no one would, you know, surpass him, whether that they couldn't, because he is a very intelligent person, or that they wouldn't, so that they would not lose favor with the Feather Tops. And Violet is a precocious youngster, would have not cared about the favor. She naively thought that Quincy would be her friend even if she did win, not realizing necessarily how much failing at that impacted Quincy. Mm-hmm. And it has not been the same since.
Yes, understood.
So Violet and Quincy are sharing this moment together in a garden terrace. It is quite romantic. It is devoid of other people. Zooming out a little bit towards one of the entrances, we can actually see a small gathering of others. Seems to be a handful of couples who are eagerly awaiting their turn to enter Garden Terrace to make a moment of their own. But in front of that, there is a sign written in a language that none of these people can understand. But to those from Rixia, it says, out of order.
Well, they're all from Rixia.
Oh, okay. Well, that's right. In the Pentarchy standard language.
Yes.
Maybe not been invented. I don't know.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Kaskrin is there in a butler's uniform that he has stolen, wiping down the stone leading up to this garden terrace and trying to hold these other potential couples back from entering the garden. Kaskrin is just saying, no, hold on one moment. The garden will be open momentarily. Let me just get this. And he's just like scrubbing the same spot over and over again. It's like, just a moment. The garden is almost ready.
I love this. What skill would you say that you are using for this, David?
I am going to appeal to their propriety.
Okay.
And I'm just going to say, everyone in single file, please make an orderly line.
Got it. And trying to emphasize like, oh, no, it has to be a perfect moment. And I'm just ensuring that this will be perfect. Mm-hmm.
And there are all these like grumbling couples just like slowly moving to the back of the line, waiting their turn.
Excellent. Do you have any additional resources that you would add to this role? If not, no worries.
I am going to...
Or you can just say, nope, I don't.
You are a former military officer. You have that commanding presence and voice to get people to follow your orders.
Yes, indeed. That makes sense.
That is true.
Yep.
So, yeah,
Kaskrin
is going to use this kind of like...
kind of authority.
Yeah.
And like kind of amount of command that he still possesses.
Yeah, exactly.
Excellent. Add an extra D6 to your pool.
Hell yeah. That is a 5.
Okay, awesome. We will count that as a success.
Hell yeah.
That is one success, which again, this is all building kind of into a big dice pool to be rolled right at the end. So off in the distance, just kind of perfectly out of eye line, is just a large queue of people who have all like taken tickets to be like, well, no, I have the 7:15 reservation. we have to go in there. I have so many great romantic gestures planned. And, you know, they're just out of luck just because, I mean, they can't cause a scene here at the Feathertop Estates. So the whole place is totally empty.
I have one I would like to... Well, my flashback is... I would like to have Quincy really remember his and Violet's friendship.
Okay.
And I feel like at the Feathertop Estate, since this is like the Emerald Gala of the season, is a lot of young people
Definitely.
Who have grown up and are now like out in society. There is definitely like a look at these youngsters section. Like, look at these kids. Look at how dorky they used to be kind of vibe.
Yeah, like it's like a 10-year high school reunion.
Yeah.
And there's like yearbook photos.
Right.
Essentially. Okay,
yeah.
I did that.
Because like it's the Feathertop Estate. They got to fill these courtyards and pantheons with something.
Yeah.
Like there's birds there, but also other things.
Yeah, they have a separate like wing of their museum that is on the property that is just...
Wing.
Damn it. It's shaped like a bird. That's fine. That is just dedicated to them... getting artists to paint memories of their life, and that's just what they've been kind of filling that section with for some time.
And And I would like to use wit to have, like, steered Quincy to that wing, like, maybe on a stroll the previous night. And then he kind of looks back at the portraits of when he and Violet, like, were friends and had those happy memories and, like, just reminiscing about what their relationship used to be.
Cool. So here's what I'll pitch the scene is.
Okay.
Is it's late at night, you're out and about. Everyone else presumably is finalizing hat selections, etc. back at the house. You find yourself in the wing of this museum, the memory lane, so to speak. And you have found kind of this corner and you are staring wistfully at it. Around the corner, of course, at some point comes Quincy. You share a look, say nothing, and then just kind of turn wistfully away, and he comes over to look at what you've been looking at. It's a roll of dice to see how successful this is.
Okay, this is wit. I have six.
Ooh,
nice.
That is a critical success.
Woo. So nervous.
and as you round the corner from this moment, you just hear kind of a little contented sigh as Quincy looks over the various portraits in front of him.
I would like it known that Violet looked cool, calm, and collected, leaving this grand hall of memories,
course.
But then dramatically turned the corner and put her back up against a cold wall and took some very deep breaths.
Naturally, yes, of course.
And one does.
And because you got a critical success, please explain what the picture is. You know, there's like, ooh, obviously, you're probably in a smattering together, but like, what's the one that's reminding of the good times?
Yes, the good times of Quincy and Violet. There was like a Rixian, like, world's fair that had, like, cool, all of the latest, like, scientific, magical inventions.
Definitely.
Of the day, and they were, like, wandering it together. And that day they spent talking of the future and their life together, their big ideas. And at that time, it wasn't, like, a romantic life together. It was like, we will always be friends, of course.
Of course.
We will both have hot air balloons in the future.
Of course.
And we'll take them to each other's estates, and it'll be a grand time. And just, like, all of those, like, fantastical ideas and planning of a wonderful future together.
Perfect. I love it.
So I have an idea, and good news is that it actually combines Sylvester's personal goal with his secret.
Ooh,
and
love that.
In order to kind of help here, the bad news is I cannot for the life of me figure out what skill I would be rolling for.
Okay,
this.
pitch kind of the idea, and we'll go from there.
So the idea is that Sylvester's personal goal is to basically see the Goldtree family elevated in status.
Mm-hmm.
His secret is that the Lynn family is much more powerful than they let on.
Absolutely.
Cool.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And so what I would like to do would be to go a little bit further back than just the garden scene.
Of course.
And we actually will see Chesterton Jeeveserton sitting down for tea, and then Sylvester walks in and Chesterton gestures him over and asks him to sit down. Chesterton produces from his coat a letter coming from the Lynn family. Essentially, this letter says, we would like to see the Goldtree family become more prominent in the area and in the politics. Please do what you can to ensure that this happens. And over tea, Sylvester and Chesterton discuss subtle yet important ways that Chesterton can actually bring the Goldtree family into conversation in a good light with the Feathertops.
I love that.
And I've been looking at it, and I'm like, I know what I want to roll, but then it kind of makes sense to roll the other things, which I'm not so good at.
Yeah.
For me, I would think, like, I don't know why stoicism and wit kind of, or honor?
Because you're using your family connections, right?
Yes.
I think propriety could work. You know, again, it's kind of knowing and manipulating society's expectations. And that kind of feels of like you're using the leverage of like a powerful family wants something. And so like we're not making any deals, of course. We're just talking through, you know, kind of hypothetical scenarios. Yes.
If it doesn't happen, there are no repercussions, but there might be some bonuses or rewards if certain things go their way.
Certainly. I think that is a great thing to roll, and I'll also give you an extra 2d6 into your pool.
Nice.
A 5, a 3. Aha! A 6 and a 4.
Hey!
We have
that
a 6
is
in
another
there. Critical success.
Nice.
Yikes. That this pool is gathering steam quickly. You may be rolling quite a few dice.
Heck yeah.
But we'll see what happens.
So Charity Goldtree did not get any sleep last night because after she was done helping Violet with her outfit for the morning, she went over to the Feathertop Estate under cover of darkness.
Mm-hmm.
And she did everything that she could to kind of prime Quincy's adolescent brain for a kiss in the morning.
Oh my gosh. I'm so sorry.
May need to mark this one explicit. Yeah. Okay.
So I'm imagining that she has snuck into his room and kind of placed...
This red, is not getting better.
Red pillows in the form of lips touching. She has commandeered the tray carrying his breakfast and drawn a small heart with a flower that looks like a violet.
Ooh, okay. In case he's very into, I don't know what the study of flowers is.
Yes.
Florology.
And she has perhaps left some lacy undergarments.
This is weird real fast.
All right.
Got too weird. This is a Regency romance novel.
Like a sock
violet,
or something.
Violence in the room.
We'll say that this is kind of what
I was thinking. It was like kiss the girl from The Little Mermaid and just like try to be like, yo,
okay,
man,
Charity,
kiss the girl.
Charity does not go halfway.
Here's what we'll say is that we established last episode that you guys are kind of starting to see and hear things in kind of both realities, right? And what Checkers does is two lip smooching pillows and a lady's undergarments that God knows, maybe it's Charity's, who knows?
Yeah.
Or they're just Checkers's.
Right.
He's just like, yeah, they're close enough. I like lace too.
Yeah.
But the in-universe version of that is smaller, daintier, kind of like master manipulator touches that are Regency appropriate, but both are canon at the same time.
Yes.
It's like... lady's handkerchief.
Yes, a handkerchief. That makes sense.
Exactly. Where like, oh, you notice that there's like two figurines that are on a windowsill, and you turn one of them so that they're facing each other and leaning in close, just to hint at romance, to maybe get romance on the mind, as opposed to like on the mirror in lipstick is writing, how about you kiss someone tomorrow?
Right, yeah. So Charity is essentially trying to wage psychological warfare on this poor teen.
Absolutely.
To get the two of them together.
Yep. Subliminal messaging. Messaging. Yeah.
And for that, I would like to roll... Part of me is like, free spirit?
I think that could work as a kind of like... I believe in like the power of suggestion.
Yeah.
Like, I believe that those tiny little things... can change someone's whole outlook on their day.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd buy that. Why not?
So I'm going to roll 3d6 for that.
Okay.
I also got a 6.
Oh,
yay!
My God.
What?
Well, good, because I only saw that one.
Yeah, a 1, 2, and a 6.
I was like in the background being like, okay, cool. Like maybe on failures, I'm going to like start taking dice away, but we'll see. Like that might be too tough. I don't know. No, fuck it. I'm taking 4 dice away if any of you fail. So he wakes up in the morning and is again, just these little, just that he doesn't even notice, doesn't even perceive them, but are just kind of, it's turning a normal, exciting day at the gala, hosting it with all the things kind of ahead, to a day of warmth, a day of, you know, kind of, again, reminiscing, maybe a little bit about looking at all those photos, or I guess painted things, painted memories, depending on the fiction. And it's just, waking up in that little bit more open, warm mood than he previously was. Perfect. That is our first go around. And we don't have to stick to the same order other than Violet has to go last in this one because that will be the moment. Role.
So much like Charity, Kaskrin has also been up all night, as I'm sure everyone else has been. But before the garden scene, Kaskrin can be found hunched over the dining room table of this miniature gold tree estate, working feverishly by candlelight. And across the table are all of these papers that have been torn out of their books and connected with red string. Kaskrin reads a piece of paper over here and describes the main character of this romance novel liking pancakes in the morning.
Yep. Uh-huh.
And it's like, does this match Quincy's character profile?
Yes.
And he goes to this other one and says, ah, the main character here enjoys his tea at precisely 107 degrees. And is like building together like a detective.
Yeah, right.
Like this outline of this person so that he can be manipulated.
Yeah, it's the Kaskrin dossier mixed with a serial killer profile.
Exactly.
But for love.
And there's all these just like romance novels thrown to the ground with all these pages torn out of them. And he is just like building together the image of a man.
100%. I don't know what you're rolling or why, but whatever you do, add an extra D6 to it.
And I want to say, in the early hours of the morning, you see Charity Goldtree crack open the door, black eyeliner underneath her eyes, wearing like full camo.
But a dress.
But in a dress.
Yeah. Yeah. And a large dress.
Yep. Yes. Is it ready, dear?
And Kaskrin looks up with bags under his eyes. Yes. Yes, it's ready. It is complete.
Good, good. And I just like take the sheets of paper from you. I just like, you hear the door slowly click closed.
Just also imagining not Kaskrin say that, but Kenjamin. Saying that and just like evil laughing. She's a bad influence. Yeah. Man.
It's for the good of the Goldtree family, all right? Right?
Yikes.
There's a reason why we were married.
And this is decades of also psychological warfare on Charity to her husband as well. Just like subtle influencing.
So for this, I think I would like to roll compassion.
Okay.
Which is going to be understanding the plight of others. In this case, understanding Quincy's fate.
Yeah. You know, I like that a lot, and I mostly like that a lot because it is nicer sounding than all of the evil cackling that YouTube just did about it, where it's like, what is the character of this man? You know, of like, what can make him happy? What can show him a good future ahead of him? That kind of thing. I think that is lovely.
So for this, I actually do not have many stats in it. I have one dice. However, I do have compassion as a character trait.
Ooh,
so I'm going to add an additional 1d6 to it.
And an extra 1d6 because I think it's very funny that Kaskrin is also being, kind of doing all this detective work.
Fantastic. I also have a 6.
What? These are not that big a dice pools. And to have no.
Love's in the air.
Yeah, right?
We got a couple more rolls ahead.
I really have to figure out what to do with Quincy now.
Yeah. It's been primed. We have his character.
Who knows, man?
What's funny is, with the dice pool, it might not matter.
It might not true. Who knows?
I am imagining that as Kenjamin is poring over all of these documents to put together a dossier, that Sylvester has been helping. While looking through all of these items, Sylvester comes across that Quincy has made several requests for a specific flower to be planted in the garden. So Sylvester is going to excuse himself temporarily from helping Kenjamin and make his way stealthily out to the garden, where he is going to find these flowers. And knowing that Violet is going to try to meet him at dawn at a specific location, he is going to use as much as possible in this world, move Earth, to move those flowers closer to the area and make sure they are in proximity to where this is going to happen.
It's just gardening.
Yeah.
You're doing gardening and you are picking, you're shoveling.
You can call it move earth if you want.
That is labor.
Well, that is what I will do for this family. I will move earth.
Yeah. Hey,
to make sure this family gets what they need. For that, it could be grace or wit to know what the flowers are, or to be able to move them and have them arranged nicely so it looks like it was professionally done.
Maybe even kind of like a compassion could work, where again, you're kind of like doing all of this knowing that it's something he cares about.
I do have 3 dice in compassion. I also have, as part of my style, compassionate. I don't know if that gets me an extra.
I got to delete that because that feels redundant.
However,
version of the game.
I will also say part of my other styles is awkward. So maybe those cancel out.
No, I think awkward's kind of perfect for this. Like, I feel like this is kind of a weirdly compassionate thing, but that you're also like, I'm being very awkward while, like, this is a weird thing for me to be doing.
Is that head butler burying bodies in the garden? Or, oh, no, that's a flower.
Burying bodies is almost, like, more acceptable. They're like, ah, well, that's a good man, right? That's who you want in your employ.
That's true. 2, 5, 2.
God damn it. Even that one. Okay. All right, that's another success.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
This episode is brought to you by A Foul Light Shines, a new free serial novel based on a D&D campaign. The Empire of Fire and Water has known 20 golden years of peace since the end of Aegenion's War, a peace which is now in peril. When a ragtag group of friends intervene in a grotesque monster attack, they're too late to save a wounded man who leaves them with an encrypted journal and the words, "Trust no one, Tyr." Can the gang find Tyr, escape the claws of more strange monsters, and uncover the lurking threat to the Empire before it's too late? This story features themes of found family and strength in diversity, and is available for free on Campfire and Royal Road. A Foul Light Shines. Come for the fantasy. Stay for the cheese-obsessed goblin gunslinger.
Hi, everyone. David here with the Midroll. We hope you've been enjoying the episode so far. If you want more of the Reckless Attack crew, come join the community on Discord. The link is in the show notes of the episode and on our website, recklessattack.com. If you want to support the show, head on over to Patreon, where you can get access to our Behind the Screen Talkback series, as well as our new series, Reckless a Snack, where we eat snacks and chat about the question of the day. As always, if you like the show, be sure to tell a friend about it too. Thanks so much for listening, and now, back to the episode.
So Charity knows that the family's efforts will succeed on this beautiful day. But just in case, she's going to put together a plan B. You find Charity Goldtree crawling through the hedges of this beautiful garden.
Mm-hmm.
And she is calling out for a specific person or animal. In this case. Here, Wendershins, Wendershins, Wendershins.
Mm-hmm.
Here, Wendershins, 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 where are you? And I'm going to try and coax Wendershins, the giant 7-foot-tall bird, out of his slumber for the evening.
Yep.
And see if I can convince him to do me a favor.
To do you a favor?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. All right.
Yo, bro.
I mean, the only pause is, do I ask you what the favor is before rolling or after? And I think I'm going to ask after. Let's see where this gets us, and then we'll go from there. And what are you using?
So this is trying to, like, convince someone to help me out. And I'm going to say This is maybe a wit roll. I'm relying on Charity's charm and conversational abilities.
With this large bird.
Yes.
Yes. You know what? It's the last episode. Hell yeah.
So I'll roll 2d6 for this.
Absolutely. Please charm this bird.
A 6.
Wow.
Oh man.
Guys, I've done there's like a lot of math about building dice pool games, like more than you'd think about like percentages of success and like how do you build, especially when it's a variable dice pool where you're adding and subtracting and doing all this other stuff. It's not supposed to be this. That's not the math. It's not the math. It's not.
Thank you, Starbucks.
God, yeah. Can you imagine if like Sophie's role is the only one we fail?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, let's keep talking because I feel like it's going to happen. Yeah.
I can imagine. Fuck. Oh my God, guys, it's so many dice. So many dice. Like, I would feel bad as a dungeon master rolling this much dice against you. And so now this is what's happening to me. Violet, you have come up to where all your best intelligence told you that Quincy Feathertop would be. Mm-hmm. He is sitting on this balcony overlooking this resplendent garden, lost in thought. He doesn't notice you until you kind of get close. You don't startle him, but you get a few seconds to just look at him. The sun is reflecting off of his glasses, and he turns around and sees you. He stands up awkwardly and just kind of beckons for you to join him onto the balcony and kind of makes room. And it is obvious to you that you are stepping into a magical moment. The garden before you is absolutely empty. Everything appears perfect. And even Quincy in front of you is no longer held by the awkward stoicism that you saw on him earlier. Instead, you see much more of the awkward, friendly academic that you grew up with. As he opens his mouth to make idle chit-chat, you presume, you hold a hand up and interrupt. And if you would please regrace us with your grand romantic gesture once more.
As he kind of raises his hand, Violet almost instinctively reaches for it, but stops herself and places it on the balcony railing, saying, "Quincy, forgive my intrusion and forwardness, but I can no longer play these gala games without telling you how ardently I admire and love you. We grew together as friends, and I know I hurt you in the past. If time were at my command, I would change our fates. The truth of my heart is that I love you, Quincy. I never wish to be parted from you. Your wit and mind challenge my own, which drives me mad, but I find I crave the banter when you are absent. If you feel the same about me, I will spend our future telling you the ways in which you entrap my heart. If you do not, I will withdraw and be of service to you to find your happiness." As she says the last line of her speech, her body facing out towards the garden, she takes a brave turn towards Quincy to look directly at him and see his reaction to what was in her heart.
He looks at you and holds your gaze for a moment before his eyes turn downward. and he can't seem to meet your gaze. In a deeper and more refined and ironed out voice than you remember, he says, "Violet, I must admit that my feelings around you being here this week were complicated. You have often been in my thoughts these last years. We were such friends. More than friends, you were a peer. And more than that, you were an inspiration. Someone who was unabashedly herself in the face of a society that tried to tell her who that self should be. But you were also the source of my greatest shame. That day when you beat me in the Junior Emerald High-Achieving Academic Decathlon, I was lost. I had never meaningfully failed at anything before in my entire life. Everything I worked for, certainly, but everything had been paved over, and I didn't know how to handle it. To make it worse, my aunt was unhappy with the result. And I have lived with that for many years. And then I saw you last night at the Feathertop Memory Mural Museum Wing. And you were looking at what once was. I could barely sleep all night, tossing and turning and lamenting, but when I awoke, it was as if the entire world had been rearranged, and with it my mind. And now, Sophie, I would like you to make a dice roll. I would like you to tell me what skill you're using and, you know, any additional kind of skills or whatever you'd like to do to build your dice pool. And do know, this will have max difficulty dice because you guys are speed running, right? Mm-hmm. Because, like, that's the whole premise, is that this is not how this was supposed to happen. This is not the fiction and, like, the kind of momentum of things. This is just, like, going up to a dude's room and being like, hey, do you want to be in love? And seeing if it works. So, with that in mind, what skill are you using? What's your dice pool look like?
I am using passion. This is pouring her heart out, her desire. And in that, her personal goal is to forge her own future. And what better way than to say exactly what she wants to the person she wants to do it with and say, this could be our future. Why wait any longer? Her style is independent. She is going full force into this, kind of shirking what society expects and saying, this is who I am. Love me for this. And if not, I am still me.
What does that look like in terms of how many dice you kind of would be rolling without the bonuses from everyone else?
So I have 3 dice for passion.
Yep.
Do I get one for personal goal?
Yep, I think so.
So that's 4, and then style?
Yeah, sure.
5, okay. Base.
Minus 3, so 2d6.
Okay.
Now, if you could take that and add 12d6 to it.
Wow.
We'll see how it goes. And also, I'll also specify, and I say this, obviously, you have a large dice pool, but you need a 6.
Yeah.
This has to be a critical success.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, not just in terms of you guys are kind of cheating the system, and therefore you need it to be big, but also this is the culmination of years of distance, of relationship, of pining, of all of this in this pivotal moment. So we're looking for a 6.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe somewhere in that 14d6 you'll find
so sad.
1-6. And I'm sure, Sophie, don't worry. I'm sure everyone else at the table didn't use up all the sixes their successes.
I don't know who to chant for. Is it Violet, or is it Val, or is it Sophie?
I know, that's what I can say. Well, maybe we'll just all chant it all at the same time.
Everybody pick one.
Yeah. All right, here we go.
Give it a roll. Like a maraca. Is there luckily, again, this is the beauty of a dice pool game. Is there a single six anywhere in there?
I don't see one. There is not.
Oh.
Wait, really?
No, wait, there is a... Okay. The upside down two on the Starbucks die looks like a six when you're looking at the wrong angle. And then I was like, oh, there are two twos. I was like, no, there's one.
There was a single Starbucks one.
Thank you so much. There is a single six.
What's that? What's the one by the...
There's a three.
Oh, this again, one? Yeah,
that is correct. Okay. I am looking at all of them. There was a five. 1-5.
Yeah, I saw the 1-5.
1-5, which was not enough.
Guys.
It's all twos. Like, it is a...
There's not even a... There's 1-4. There's a 4, a 5, and a 6, and they are all 1s, 2s, and 3s.
No, there is one... There's 2 3s. All the rest are 2s. And well, like, it is a... Yeah. It would have been a catastrophic failure.
Oh, my God.
I'm so glad I did not use that to cast Fireball.
Again. You know, I feel better about the large dice pool that I allowed for you guys to build. Because yikes-a-roni. That was a
guys,
close
I'm, like,
one.
Guys, I'm sweating.
Yeah. Oh, no.
I got one.
1-6.
What, but you know, one's all you need, baby. Quincy says all of this, and again, this whole time he has not been looking at you. And... as he says this, as he says that his mind had also been almost rearranged, he finally makes eye contact with you again. He says, I am so filled with shame and regret and admiration and love, and I hope my childish reaction to you those years ago will be something that I can spend all the years of our life showing that that is not who I am and not how I feel about you. For what I feel is also love.
At that, Violet steps into his space and grabs both of his hands and goes on her tiptoes to, like, touch foreheads together.
The orchestra swells in the background. There's these, you know, golden motes of ambiance floating around you somehow in some strange way. And it is as if the world revolves around the two of you as you share this moment. And then in the garden underneath you, you hear a voice. Disappointing. All of you know exactly who that voice is coming from, as the lady of the estate, Florentina Feathertop, aunt to Quincy, steps into the middle of this grand scene. And she stands there. And she is, without going into too much detail, is wearing a ridiculous amount of clothing. Has a gown with a train that just goes off screen, you know, like goes around corners. Mm-hmm. And is, again, just bedecked in all kinds of feathery garments and boas and whatnot. And looks, unfortunately, impeccable as always. I had expected more of you, Quincy. This whole event was for you. This was the time for you to finally step forward and accept the responsibilities due your station. This is how you choose to spend your time here at the Emerald Gala. On the first morning after the first event, proclaiming love disappointing. Disappointing. Quincy kind of like steps forward slightly, you know, kind of not like fully shielding you, but kind of doing that like halfway in front of you kind of situation. And you see he has a furrowed brow and kind of opens his mouth once more to kind of say something, to kind of stand up to her. And she just holds a finger up pointedly and it stops him in his tracks. She takes a few steps forward and you all start to hear a beautiful cacophony of squawks and chirps and melodies as the whole garden around you begins to come alive with a variety of beautiful, splendid, rare, incredible birds. Much like you saw her the evening before, she begins to walk towards you and ascend as birds not just fly under her feet, but grab onto her dress, lift her up as she is walking up towards you all.
As she walks towards Quincy and Violet, Violet will step up next to Quincy and grab his hand and squeeze it with a feeling of, I'm here with you, I still stand by you.
Florentina, again, just is looking daggers at both of you. She finally walks all the way up and is now standing, even if not maybe a little above each of you. She stares at Quincy and then casts her gaze downward at you, Violet. And she says, you thought we were done. I thought we were done. But thanks to some aggressive negotiation, there is a new partnership here in, and in this moment, Violet and Val hear different things. Violet hears there's a new partnership here in the Feathertop Estate. And Val hears there's a new partnership here in the restricted section. As you see, simultaneously, the glowering, yet still prim, proper, put-together face of Lady Feathertop and the rotating head of Larry Steeves.
No!
And you see this big grin as his head just rotates around. Don't worry, we already have a lot of new games prepared. The four of you are going to stay here for some time. And they, I guess we'll say, kind of gesture downward. And all of the birds also go through this kind of dual vision. And you are all seeing this now too. All of the birds are revealed to be the worm that had been chasing you. The bookworm. And it lets out a mighty roar. And we'll see you next week, everyone.
Oh, no!
See you next time for Dungeons & Dragons.
Oh!
Find out next time. Bye.
Sorry, Vel, I'm never going to the library again.
I don't think I've ever been so actually surprised as shocked. Yeah.
Right?
We don't write this. I did not see Larry Steve's coming back.
No.
Got him, baby.